Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Mark Wogenrich, have you ever seen a team draw the other team offside and get a first down before? I thought that was a remarkable moment.
I missed that on Sunday night because I was fretting over Yankees baseball, but that would be revolutionary, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sirianni acted like he was, I outsmarted all the Cowboys. Look what I did. I'm like sitting there like going, Nick, just put the headset back on, okay? It happened. That's a good thing. Just kind of pump your fist quietly and move on. Exactly. So let's get to Saturday. I think it is what it is. We saw what happened on Saturday. There isn't a single Penn State person on that plane thought they were going to lose, and then it played out that way. What did you see?
Yes. not being on the plane, could envision scenarios in which they would lose. I think my pick was that they would lose, but it was like 21-17. I did not envision a 40-point offensive day for Michigan against Penn State defense. In no way. I thought this was going to be... Yeah. I figured Penn State's offense was going to have trouble scoring, which it did. I did not see that. I just didn't see that the way they were able to move the ball just at will. There was a stat I found yesterday that Michigan ran 38 first-down plays for 295 yards, which is 27 yards more than Penn State gained the entire game.
Yep.
James Franklin, everybody said that before the game. It was about keeping them under control and first down and not letting them stay on schedule, ahead of the sticks, all of that sort of thing. So this was not new information. They game planned for it. And the fact that Michigan was able to do that, almost 300 yards of offense just on first down, that has to alarm you as a defensive staff and a defense in and of itself. It's also something ultimately that you could wash away as being a bad game on a bad day. And maybe sometimes those games are easier to wash away than having a football touch a pylon in the second overtime. So
yeah. Well, so I keep on my chart, and it's a stat I keep. It's called stop rate. To me, when you hire any defensive coordinator, I think I watched Alabama-Tennessee on the plane coming back. And that's the kind of game where you're looking at your defensive coordinator saying, hey, look, get me one more, quote, stop each half, and we can win the game. So I keep that on my chart. Penn State's stop rate defensively have been 81% on the season. In other words, the opposition had only scored on 12 of the 64 drives against Penn State the whole year. Saturday, they had 2 stops out of 10. And it just tells you about how dominant and how they played out. And at the start of the second half, Mark, Penn State takes the lead, and you needed a 3-and-out there, and McCarthy was able to scramble out and get that third down when they finally did get the first down stop they were looking for.
And, the one stop, was the touchdown. It was the defensive touchdown, which that was their defensive, that was like their best defensive move this year, being able to be aggressive and stop passing downs. Got a hand up, Sean Robinson, great play, gets a hand up, and I think it was the 51st, 52nd pass breakup of the year. So that's the kind of thing, when you do that many times, maybe it could lead to something crazy like what happened with, P.J. Mustipher and then to Curtis Jacobs, that sort of thing. Otherwise, though, they hadn't being unable to get any semblance of run game stoppage on there and giving up the yards, like I said, the yards that they did on first down, and that led to situations where J.J. McCarthy could run on second, second and short, third and short, whatever. He could roll out, make safe throws. I think that's just the last thing Penn State wanted to do is have Jim Harbaugh and his staff feel comfortable with their second and third down play calls. And they were, for the most part, overwhelmingly, they were. And even that, even coming out of the third, or coming out of the third quarter there, like you said, if you're able to get a stop, then maybe that that, you know, that crazy second quarter, you could rebuild on that. And the second quarter to me was almost like a hockey period where some team outscores, you know, outshoots a team 28-5 and gives up a goal, that sort of thing. The numbers were so skewed, and Penn State outscored them 14-10. It just didn't seem, though, it just felt unsustainable. And with not being able to get that third, you know, the third quarter stop right out of the gate, it kind of proved that it was.
Yeah, and that's because I'd said that Penn State, they took the lead. You needed a three and out there. Then Edwards goes to 67 after McCarthy gets the first down. They get the two on the Patriots play, right? That little quick toss to Bell and he runs in. All right. But then Penn State drives. It wasn't like they went three and out. And then there was that offensive pass interference call. You know, and it's correct. The call's correct. I mean, he's about a yard downfield. If the ball's behind the line of scrimmage, it's not called. But it's still called. And instead of getting a first down at the 28, the 15 knocks you back. You can't get it. Then Corum goes 61. You feel like that's the ball game.
Their first half, I mean, there was a dichotomy between Penn State's offensive series, first half, second half. I mean, their play charts, the first, it's like three plays, seven plays. Yep. Dictated mostly by Sean Clifford's really terrific tuck and run, and then then they kneel on the ball at the end of the half. They did. Sure. They moved the ball a little bit. There was just, you know, not being able to move the ball really more significantly. Put the point, you know, getting the touchdown, especially coming out of that third quarter and with the big play to Trey Wallace, that sort of thing. You know, Penn State's defense best friend was almost the media timeout in that first half. That was the only thing that was really keeping them off the field. And, complimentary football goes both ways in that an offense must be able to string some drives to get the defense a chance to reset. But if you're not getting a third down stop, and you're putting yourself into situations where it's third and one, third and two all the time, and they have free releases, man, it's going to snowball. Which it did, and ultimately that second quarter, like I said, just proved to be kind of an outlier quarter in a game where, you know, team was just better the whole time.
And it shows in other areas, too, where it's, quote, not your day. Okay, they kick off. The ball goes out of bounds. Great. you just took the lead. The ball goes out of bounds. You hand the ball at the 35. In a day, Barney's been good all year. He didn't punt the ball so well. I mean, even little stuff like that where you sit back and go, jeepers, cats. All right, so now it's where do you go to from here? You've got another team that is heavy on – they want to shorten the game. I think that's fair to say. So where do you go from here?
It's interesting. I was looking at some numbers because I think we're probably going to hear a lot this week about James Franklin's record after losses. He considered it all before, you know, last week. Record after bye, record against top five teams, all of that sort of thing. And those are all more complicated than they appear. So I was like, okay, yeah, there are instances, like anecdotal instances after losses where there have been other bad losses, 17-18 last year. Absolutely, you can't discount that. After big losses, though, and I just picked 20 points as a number to watch, you know, as my, like, barometer number. Penn State, I think it was eight games under James Franklin that they've lost by 20 or more. Two of them are regular season enders, so I discounted those, so that's five since 2014 that they've lost by 20 or more. They're 4-1 after those games, and they've won four straight. They lost Ohio State, beat Maryland, lost to Michigan. 2016, a huge win, and they beat Minnesota, so there's, you know, a bit of a coincidence there. Even 2020, I mean, that was kind of the end of the road for the five-game losing streak, losing to Iowa, that 41-21 game. They beat Michigan the following week. They've been good. That's why, you know, they've at least bounced back from these sorts of games, which is why I think, again, maybe it's easier. Maybe you just realize we got sunk. We don't have to play Michigan again this year. Next, that sort of thing, instead of laboring over the fact that the 4-6 plays we didn't make. You can look at the correction and say, okay, you were, you know, the pass play that that caused, you know, the pass interference call, and, you know, if we would have executed that properly, you know, like in the larger context of the game, it didn't matter. You can still correct that and run the play well again this week in a game where it might have more of a meaning because you're going to be better you're going to get a better matchup, and you're at least just cleanse that game. And that's where I look at that. When you get beat down, I just have this sense that those games are easier to get rid of than, you know, a game that's just a really rough loss that you're just going to steam over.
Yeah, and then there'll be some mystery this week about, obviously, quarterbacks, especially Tanner Morgan. They'll be in mystery about Tanner Morgan. They'll never tell you whether he's playing or not. I mean, I always love the word Fleck used, P.J. Fleck used today. He'll be attending practice. Well, I can tell you right now, a lot of people are attending it.
Right.
You know, doesn't mean they're doing anything, but they can attend it. So, I went to Word College. Okay, good for you.
Right. Why not a team? The benefits matter, team.
But what the heck? Did you get any chance to see Tennessee, Alabama? Just for the sake of
it? I saw the end of it. I was moving in and out of that game, and I saw the end of it, and you know, gosh, I really like Hendon Hooker and that offense.
Yeah.
And it's not new to me. It's not, you know, it's certainly not new, a new point to me, but it made me think about, like, playoff games, you know, home site playoff games in the future, I think are going to be really darn cool.
Yeah.
When you get atmospheres like that, you know, like what happened in Michigan, and atmospheres like in Knoxville, stuff like that, they are going to be so much better than what you're going to see in the semifinals of the playoff. And I know the playoff committee has discussed, you know, about having the home sites, the first round, first maybe even second round home sites. But that, I think that might be a better product than an NFL playoff, because of the newness of it, what it's going to be. And I think with those games Saturday, you really, really saw that. I think now, is Tennessee now GoFundMe for new goalposts? Or not? I read that somewhere.
Yeah, they ended up in the river. I think back before your time when Penn State beat Nebraska, they paraded the goalpost down College Avenue. Now, I am not endorsing that, people, okay? There's a reason why they stopped doing it, okay? It's dangerous. It doesn't mean that you don't look at it and go, hey, all right.
I enjoy that Tennessee is fundraising off that, too. Heck, you know, good for them.
Yes, yeah, they want more money for more goalposts. I know. I saw that. Mark, always great. Great perspective. I appreciate you, as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Look forward to see you this week.